Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, how was your long weekend?
It was solid, buddy. How about you?
Outstanding. Took in the world's longest game. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of fun times outside. It was great.
Nice.
Watch some sports. Connor had a really good question.
Okay.
Malcolm Subban, Lauren Bossois. Who do you think right now is a better prospect?
I would say that Malcolm Subban is probably more of a highly touted prospect than Laurent Bressois. I mean, Subban was a first rounder, right? Which for goaltenders is fairly unusual. And I think that he has kind of otherworldly athleticism and lots of potential in his game. So I would say he's probably the more highly thought of prospect. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, maybe. I'm curious. You know, it's such a hard position to evaluate from my perspective. So
yeah.
I just thought it was a good question. My answer was I'd rather have both because I think the chances are then better. Because, you know, Subban looks okay, sure. Now, he is in the NHL, so you can argue that he's ahead of Lauren Bossois right now. No argument about it, right? I know there's been a lot of rumors about, Boston. And with Tuukka Rask locked up long-term, I could see them maybe dealing Subban. But I think his value now isn't that high because he's still really unproven.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I think his value is still fairly high, though, because I think people look at the athleticism, they look at the pedigree, they look at, I mean, even his numbers are pretty good in the minors. Although he's not even the best goalie in Providence at this point. He's played the same number of games as their other guy, and the other guy's got better numbers and more wins. But, I mean, Subban is young still, right? Like, he's really young. So, I think there's a good chance he starts tomorrow night. I think he's still pretty highly thought of, but the Bruins have their goaltending situation locked up for a long time. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they were at least willing to consider moving him to improve their team right now. Because, I mean, it's a lot like Martin Jones in L.A., where they've got Jonathan Quick sitting there and probably a pretty good asset in Martin Jones that they could move and improve their team and water themselves down a little bit at the backup goaltending position. So it wouldn't shock me if the Bruins did something like that.
Hmm. Looking at the Edmonton Oilers, Ryan, we are now 13 days away from trade deadline. What's your take on why the Oilers haven't even offered Jeff Petrie's camp a contract?
Yeah, good question. I mean, there were talks in the offseason. And I think both sides probably got a little bit of a feel for the other one's willingness to do a long-term deal, and it was pretty clear early on that it wasn't going to be a fit on a long-term deal, and so I don't know. As we approach deadline, maybe each side is assuming that the other's position hasn't changed, and they both know that they weren't even close back then. So if they explored the possibility of a long-term deal in the summer and they weren't even in the same ballpark, why would anything have changed? So maybe they've gone down that road and been down that path and just sort of realize it's probably not in the cards. That would be my best guess.
No. Well, here's the thing. Like, what do you, like, when I look at the Oilers signed to Keaton for 2 years at 4.5, and everybody at the time thought, okay, you know, it's too expensive of a deal. I don't think there's any debate about that. Justin Schultz got more than Jeff Petrie. Like, to me, actions always speak louder than words, Ryan. And Schultz got more on a 1 year deal than Jeff Petrie. Then he got the Norris Trophy potential talk after he signed, which Petrie got none of, and got less money. It seems that the GM decided last summer Justin Schultz was better than Jeff Petrie.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's remember that I mean, Craig McTavish, he inherited Jeff Petrie, whereas he went out and earned Justin Schultz, right? He was a big part of that push to get Schultz.
But that doesn't mean you shouldn't allow your bias to cloud your judgment, should you?
Well, everybody has their guys, right? Justin Schultz was considered a victory in Craig McTavish's early tenure, being back with the organization. So he looks at this player as somebody who the organization went out and won. Petrie was a guy who was just kind of been here.
But they drafted him. Like, I don't know. That's not bad. He's a veteran guy.
Sure. For sure. But as a general manager, I mean, like, look, Craig has always spoken extremely highly of Justin Schultz. And I think that, you know, if Craig were to talk honestly, and really he has, he considers Justin Schultz's upside to be much higher than Jeff Petrie. So in other words, Petrie is what he is right now, probably in Craig McTavish's mind, whereas Justin Schultz still has lots of upside and lots of potential. And so, look, people have biases, and there's no question that Justin Schultz, you know, Craig McTavish is a big believer in Justin Schultz and has made no bones about that publicly. But, I mean, to your point, they're letting a very good defenseman in Jeff Petrie go, who was drafted and developed within the organization, who they spent all this time really misusing him and miscasting him in a top-pairing role. And so the sense of him is he's underachieved, when really, as a number four defenseman, which is kind of what Petrie is, or even a five, he's actually achieved quite a bit and done quite well. He's just been miscast in Edmonton. So you get this sense about this player, like he's been an underachiever of some sort, when really he's just been miscast. And so the Oilers, I don't know, I like we've talked about before on the show, man, I don't think it's a player the Oilers want to overpay to keep, and I don't think Petrie wants to be overpaid to play here. And he's not taking the hometown discount in any way, shape, or form. So I just don't think that it's a fit, and I think both sides probably just assume it's not. Now, maybe that'll change in the 11th hour, but you'd have to assume they talked about this in the offseason, and that why would the numbers be any different now?
Yeah, that's fair. I guess it just, to me, I think it's open to questioning why you would think last year that you're going to say, okay, well, Justin Schultz is our guy. To me, it's very reminiscent of a totally different situation that, okay, we can only negotiate with Marian Hossa. We're not going to negotiate with Curtis Glencross. Like, why can't you like Justin Schultz but still have Jeff Petrie? You know, like, and then, now maybe they're going to say, well, we can't have two right shot defensemen. Well, newsflash, there's no big long list of free agents available that are right shot defensemen, and there's no right shot defensemen in the organization that are knocking down the door that are Oscar Klefbom like and ready to play.
Yeah, left shot guys play on the right side all the time.
So okay, so who? Right, so then tell me who the left shot guys are that are pounding down the door ready to play.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think they really the big mistake that they made was looking at Nikita Nikitin and basically giving him Petrie's money. That basically is a big mistake that they made, because he's not nearly as good as they thought he was going to be. And they handed him right in around the range of dollar figures that they could have been paying Petrie on a long-term deal here. Even if they'd given Petrie a four-year deal at 4 point whatever, which back then when they were negotiating probably would have been closer to four. But they misjudged on the keep. They traded for the rights to then sign to way too much money a very below-average defenseman. And that contract now, when they're looking at their books and trying to figure out how to make it work, there's no room to overpay Petrie, probably in their minds, when they're already paying that kind of money on the back end. And I don't know, man, like Petrie, on a long-term deal to stay here in Edmonton, what do you think the number looks like? Like and how many years do you think Petrie wants? Because if I'm his camp, I'm asking for 6 years somewhere.
Yeah, okay.
For sure.
If he's 6 years at Anton Stralman money, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Right? Because they don't have many other guys. And the thing is, when he's locked up under contract, you know what? And sure, people are going to say, well, maybe that's too much. But that's what he's going to get in free agency, and maybe that's too much. But I think you probably could have got him for 4 years at $4 million last summer. And then if you still didn't like him in a year, half, you could have traded him, because at $4 million with 2 years left on his deal, you know, at his age at 28 or 9, teams would have been interested in it. My question, though, Ryan, is it sure looks like do the Oilers know how to evaluate defensemen? Because they overrate Justin Schultz at this point. We could talk potential till we're blue in the face. Potential is Justin Schultz ever going to be a guy who's going to have a really high competitiveness in his game? I sure don't think so. He can move the puck well and play all that other stuff. Great. But when push comes to shove and you're in a battle in the corner in the playoffs, is he going to suddenly have that in his game? He's sure never shown it. Jeff Petrie's at least shown that at times, right? Nikita Nikitin's being a total bust. So I think it's valid to question, does Craig McTavish and the Oilers organization, or the guys running those decisions, know how to evaluate pro NHL defensemen?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair, and I think it was fair before the start of this year. I mean, if you look back to the start of last year and the defensemen they came into the year with, I mean, it was unbelievable how bad that blue line core was, and you know, Grebishkov and Beloff and Philip Larson, and just the list goes on and on of guys that just, you look at how many of them are even in the league anymore. It's unbelievable what they started the year with last year. So bunch of misfires last year, the Nikitin debacle that has been. Fain, I mean, the jury's still out on Fain. I'm okay with Mark Fain. I think he serves a purpose, and I'm okay with the signing and him being an Oiler. But you know, letting Petrie walk here, yeah, I think it's completely fair to question their ability to assess NHL talent on the blue line and to question it a little bit and look at their track record, say it hasn't been nearly good enough, they're not making the right bets. And I mean, really, it kind of goes across the organization. I wouldn't necessarily just stop it at, you know, the NHL level. I mean, across the amateur level too, it's developing and drafting and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I think it's completely fair criticism. And look, Petrie will probably end up walking here, and someone will probably give him 6 years at 27 or 28 million bucks. He'll probably end up in that 4.5+ range in free agency, because free agency gets ridiculous. And I just don't know that the Oilers are willing to shell out that kind of money for this type of player.
Well, the thing is, when they make the trade, which I think is going to happen in the next 13 days, they're not only worse for the remainder of this year, they're worse next season.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm fine with them being worse for the rest of this year. I mean, it doesn't really matter. Like, in fact, the worse they are this year, the better, because then their draft pick will be better. And I know fans don't want to hear that, and I'm sure you don't even like hearing that, but that's the absolute truth of the matter. Is, I mean, Craig McTavish isn't going to make any trades to improve this team right now. He's just not going to do it, because all it does is diminish one of the organization's biggest assets, which is their first round pick this year. So it's not, I see him moving out Petrie. The question to me is how many more of his unrestricted free agents does he move out? Derek Roy is the big one for me. He's unrestricted, and if you can get something for him, move him. Yet he's helping Yakupov. He's playing better. They've been a better team with him. So they're not going to be as good the day after they trade him, which to me is not a big deal for this year. And if Derek Roy wants to come back to Edmonton and play with Yakupov, well, maybe they'll have a chance to re-sign him in the offseason. But I just don't have an issue with him making whatever deals he needs to make to get this team to a point where they're not letting any guys walk away for nothing.
Well, Victor Foss with that injury, unlikely going to be one of those guys. That injury definitely looks like, I don't see how he'll be tradable in the next 13 days.
Could have blown any number of things. That just looked awful. Like, he showed great athleticism in trying to get there. But yeah, that was no good. We'll see what Craig has in store here at trade deadline. I don't see him doing any deals right now to bolster anything in his lineup, or even to fix the goaltending right now. You know, even to do that, I think his mindset is to try and get anything productive in the lineup to get that done in the off season. But Derek Roy to me is the interesting one, that the biggest question mark for me, because I think Petrie's a fait accompli. I'm not sure what they're going to do with Roy.
Well, he's definitely maybe intrigued some teams with how he's played. But if you're the Edmonton owners, Ryan, honestly, I'd be talking to Derek Roy's camp now and find out if I could sign him to a one-year extension now. Because, you know, sure, you can trade him away with and get a fourth-round pick or whatever it's going to be with the hopes of maybe re-signing him. But this team needs to know they have some guarantees, not rather hope and pick and choose between the scraps come free agency.
Well, I'll tell you what, signing Derek Roy now will do is it will buy them some time with Draisaitl, right? Because if you think about what their depth chart looks like for next year, see, the problem with signing Roy right now is they don't know where they're picking, because one of those top two centers plays in the league next year, right? So if you sign Roy now and then you end up taking Jack Eichel, well, now you got Eichel, Nugent Hopkins, Draisaitl, Gordon, Lander, and Derek Roy. Now, Lander can play the wing if need be, but you've kind of overdone it a little bit, right? Whereas waiting until you know what your draft pick is, but what it does do is it allows you to start Leon in the minors next year, which you know, I think they would be smart to do. I think they'd be smart to start Draisaitl off in the minors next year, give him 15, 20, 30 games there to get the feet going and get going and see how he does and have some success there, and then bring him in. And if you think about it, they tried to sign Perreault in this last offseason. So if they grab Derek Roy right now, then that essentially ends up being the same position that they were trying to fill anyways.
Yeah, but you can't go in with that many inexperienced players, right? Like, you can talk about the top picks or whatever, and if, you know, if, like, right now they got, like, a 13% chance to get McDavid, and then maybe they keep Eichel, we'll see. But at best, you know, if it's Eichel, you know, there's a lot of people that think he's could be a NCAA for another season, and it wouldn't be the worst thing, because then you're going to have Eichel, and I know he technically could qualify for the AHL if they wanted. That would be a strange one, but they could use that to their advantage because he's an NCAA guy and put him there. But you got him and Draisaitl, and more youth is not the answer for this team, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, and I don't disagree. And that's why if you decide that Derek Roy, you want him for another year, and he's willing to do it, you lock him down for 1 year, then... Well, then fine, and it's you get a little bit of stability. He'll be with Nail. I mean, you can't deny that he's helped Nail. I mean, he's the first guy they've been able to find that has any level of chemistry at all with Yakupov.
I agree.
Like, really?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly why I think you'd look at him. 100%. Yeah. Exactly. You know what? Having some a veteran guy who covers up in the defensive zone, and, you know, Yakupov obviously likes to play with. You know, that's a key. Which leads me one final one. What do you make of this little run by Yakupov?
Well, I think it's good. I think it was going really, really badly the wrong way for him. I think it's a combination of having found a line mate in Derek Roy, and the coaching change has probably made a huge difference for Yakupov. I think that for whatever reason, he and Dallas just had a tough go. And the change of scenery at the head coaching position, I think, relaxed Nail a little bit. He's playing looser. I think he's playing a much better game. Like, he's not all over the place as much anymore. He's using his teammates more. He's being put in opportunities on the power play and in shootouts, these sorts of things, to gain confidence, which is what a young player needs. And to me, there's probably no better example of a guy skating around out there looser and less afraid to make mistakes than Yakupov. So I credit a new line mate, I credit a new coach, and I think Nail's just doing a heck of a job of just playing better.
Well, he's definitely playing better. There's no doubt about it. And you know what? I hope he continues to play well. And I'm telling you, if I'm the Edmonton Oilers, Yakupov ends the season on a hot streak, that's when I trade him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I'd be interested to see, even heading into the deadline here, buddy, what the return might end up being. If he stays hot for another week or two here as we head into the deadline, I'd be interested to see what, and we'll never know this, what McTavish's best offer will be at this deadline, because... anybody that's going to trade for him, I mean, they're not going to want to give up assets off their roster right now, because they're going to be a team that wants him for the playoffs or whatever. But yeah, this is the time where if you can get him playing well and you can get the value up and you got a chance to make a bit of an organizational shift, then you just do it. Mm. And you kind of hold your breath when you do, if you're the Oilers, because, you know, you never know what the guy ends up doing. It's always dangerous to trade a young skilled player. But I'm not sure that he's going to push through and end up being a 60 or 70 point player in this league.
It's not even just the offense. You need to be more than just that. And that's to me the other one. And I'll end this with saying I politely disagree. The Oilers having too many centermen will never be an issue, because they've never had enough.
Yeah, well, and that's true. But I mean, on that list that I just talked about, potentially, you were right in saying they don't need to get younger. So having veteran centermen who can play. But I mean, I think Lander. If things continue this way for Lander, you have to pencil him in next year in one of the four starting spots. You know what I mean? I think he's earning it. He's playing well enough.
Yeah, he could be a third line guy who, he's shown a presence in front of the net on the power play, and, you know, could be a third line guy who's good enough defensively, right? And Gordon is your fourth line harder minutes. Sure, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be totally against that. So that still leaves a number two slot.
Maybe they go the other way, buddy, and people won't like to hear this, but maybe they look at Lander as a potential fourth line guy, and if they think Derek Roy is going to be in the picture, and who knows what the return looks like for Boyd Gordon in a trade. But I think there would be some teams out there that would really like to add Boyd Gordon for the playoff drive. And as much as it would hurt the Oilers, maybe Lander's improved play gives the Oilers an opportunity to at least look at that.
Interesting. Shogar, have yourself a good one. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, pal. Have a nice one.